This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil. Guatemala, part of the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, Central America, contributing, we're told, to a sense of instability in the region because of the migration, also because it's had troubled elections in the past. But a surprise in the most recent round, within these last hours, there will be a second round. No candidate won more than 50% of the vote. We're looking at a surprise candidate entering into the runoff between Sandra Torres, former First Lady, and Bernardo Arevalo, a center-left candidate. Joseph, I come to you because you've already given me to understand Bernardo came out of nowhere. What does this tell us about the people of Guatemala? Because there was an article that I brought to your attention in Foreign Affairs that was extremely discouraging about Guatemala's vote this time because major candidates had been dismissed by the courts. Who is Bernardo Arevalo, and why is he suddenly in the news all around the world?
Well, I think we're just waking up to learn more about Bernardo Arevalo because he wasn't a major presidential contender in the polls that were leading up to this election. He was polling, I believe, at 3% prior coming into the election on Sunday night. And so it was a big surprise for many people. He came out on top at the number two, but a solid number two at 12%. Sandra Torres has 15%. But you know, what has higher percentage than both of them is the nullified or blank votes inside the country. One out of every four Guatemalans either submitted a ballot with no votes or a nullified vote, meaning they don't like any of the candidates. So that's a quarter of the people that voted. So that's huge. And you add that to the 40% abstention rate. There's a huge discontent being shown among the Guatemalan electorate about the electoral scenarios, the candidates, and even the outcomes. So that I could talk about that in a second. But I mean, the big winner of the first round of the Guatemalan elections is the left, and so no matter how you cut it, on August 20th, when they go into the second round, the winner is going to be a leftist president, whether it's more of a radical leftist like Sandra Torres or a center left like Bernardo Arevalo. It's going to be a leftist president. And that'll be the first leftist president in Guatemala since Alvaro Corom left office in 2011 or 12, around that time frame. The big losers of last night, John, is one is I think Zuri Rios we have to talk about because she underperformed. She was supposed to be the contender that was going to move on to the second round. She was the one that the conservative right rallied around. But she finished in not even, I don't know, sixth, seventh or eighth place. She finished pretty well low and beneath the expectations of many people that had been invested into her. I believe the second biggest loser of last night was the Guatemalan electoral system. Both in terms of, what you talked about, a lot of people are discontent because there were a lot of candidates that were nullified, that were moving from contention because of small little, almost seems like bureaucratic rules, but also even the ability to get the counts in. I mean, it took much longer than it usually does. Usually Guatemala is pretty efficient with their electoral system and electoral count. As of this morning, they still haven't finished the counting. And so I think that's a big part. Now, what is this going to mean? I think for what the United States is looking at, U.S. interests, the border, China. This is a concern, John, because what you're seeing in Guatemala take place is people losing faith in the system, and that could lead to a lot of political instability. And I'm worried about that because, Guatemala, relative to its neighbors, Honduras, Salvador, other places, it's been a little bit more stable, but that could change, and that could create more complications for the U.S. southern border, which is already facing a severe capacity crisis. And then the other aspect to this, John, is China, because we know that Guatemala is one of the remaining countries that's hold steadfast on its recognition of Taiwan. They've already flipped El Salvador and Honduras. But I think depending on who wins this election, I think China is going to have an ability to be able to create some leverage and perhaps potentially flip Guatemala into its geopolitical orbit. We hope that's not the case, but we have to take that into consideration given I know less about Arevalo's position, but I know that Sandra Torres has hinted that she would consider this much like Xiomara Castro did in Honduras.
Ernesto, your thoughts on Guatemala, because my understanding from the Foreign Affairs piece that I read is that there's long been alienation in Guatemala between the elite families and the voting public, having to do with who controls revenues, who controls the government. And this election now doesn't change that pattern whatsoever, although Arevalo is, to my understanding, a center-left politician, not seen, as Joseph says, identified with the hard left. Torres, however, is the first lady of a former president, which means no change. Is there, in general, in Latin America, a divide between the elite families and the working middle class? Does that happen in all countries or just in certain countries?
It happens everywhere, John. The problem is that in some cases, as in Brazil, the elite made a very deep alliance with the left, with the narco-socialist project that is rampant now in the region. In Brazil, that was clearly the case. I mean, we have this old oligarchy that ran the country for forever, and they discovered that they are twin brothers or twin siblings with the left, with Lula and his party, and they just want to organize things and distribute the money, distribute the flows of corruption among them. That's what's been happening in Brazil since the beginning of the first Lula administration up to now, with the exception of maybe the first half of Bolsonaro's government. So the elites are like that. I mean, they want to stay in power, and in Brazil they found that that way. What I think should happen is for elites across the region to be nudged, let's say, towards a liberal approach to the country and to law and order. And that was part of our plan, I mean, in the first half of Bolsonaro government, to try to use whatever is there to build stronger democracies across the region. And in Brazil also, with a new composition of power, where elites have to give up power to the middle class, to the people as a whole. And that's what has not happened. I mean, elites, they want to stay in power. They don't want to liberalize or anything. So the strategy that they're finding in most places, I think, is to make an alliance with the left and with narco-socialism.
The second round will be August 20th, so there's a deal of campaigning ahead. I note, Joseph, that a common theme in the success of Torres and Arevalo is law and order. That means violence is a threat to everyone. I note that Honduras is now reporting many murders in the streets following a prison riot, a women's prison riot of murders last week. Dozens murdered. And these are the gangs, said to be the gang cartels. And so the law and order theme, that resonates at the polls, but is there any evidence that it's being applied to the police departments, making success against the gangs? Sometimes when I read these headlines, it looks like the gangs are the government and everybody else is just hiding behind gated communities.
Well, that's not too far of a stretch, John. I mean, the transnational criminal organizations that operate in Central America are very powerful. And there is a demand by the constituents, the citizens of these countries, for law and order. I think that's led to a lot of the rise of the popularity of presidents like Nayib Bukele in Salvador. Was the basically the strong hand approach that he applies to the gangs and to the illicit actors in El Salvador. And in the case of Guatemala, it's remained to be seen. But here's the thing, John. There's also a criminal aspect to certain political movements in Latin America as a whole, and in Central America in particular. And, you know, we talked a lot about on this program about the Foro Sao Paulo network and the Bolivarian Threat Network. And these networks, and this is, I'm referring to the Maduros, the Ortegas, the Cubas of the region, these networks are embedded with transnational organized crime. I mean, they work hand in glove with the cartels. And so if you have a certain political candidate, and I don't want to say exactly in the case of Guatemala, because I don't want to taint that, but it's very, we have to be very keen to understand which one of those political candidates is closer to that network. Because if they're closer to that political network, it's more in line with closer to the interests of the cartels. The cartels don't want to live in complete anarchy. They want to live in a place where they have a weak and corrupt government that bends to their will. And that's what they're living in many of these countries. But when they go a step further is when they go to these criminalized states like Venezuela, where they're not they're weak in institutional, but they're strong in their abilities to operationalize criminality as a method of warfare. And I think that's what we're going to potentially see in Central America. We're already starting to see this in Honduras, John. We're already starting to see transnational organized crime start to become embedded with elements of the Castro government. Now, right now, it's looking like it's happening at a corrupt level, like, you know, corruption that we've seen in the past. But this could get worse as actors like China, Russia, and Iran get more embedded in those countries.
And Honduras, I'm not familiar with the backstory in many of these countries, Joseph. Was Honduras always at risk to the gangs? Because there was a long article in The New Yorker, I can remember last year, talking about former leaders, former presidents, either their brothers being indicted. I can't remember all the details, but much prosecution of the elite families as men and who took advantage of the gangs. So is there some kind of marriage between the gangs and the elites?
Yeah, so the gangs have always been strong in Honduras. You know, they have the 18th Street Gang, which is a rival to MS-13. And then now that the MS-13 is getting squeezed in El Salvador, a lot of them are moving into Honduras with more strength. And so that's a big problem for the country, but it's also a major corridor for drug trafficking. If you look at, I don't know if anyone's seen those DEA maps that they've shown quite a bit in different briefings, where it shows the drug trafficking, drug distribution that goes from South America to Central America into the United States. Well, if you look at the overlay of the map, it's all going from basically South America to Honduras. And then Honduras is the major pivot point, transit point for the drugs that get moved around the border up to the U.S. southern border. So Honduras faces a lot of these challenges with drug trafficking, gangs, and cartels. But the biggest challenge is when the government starts to get more involved in that activity. And they've had previous governments that have been involved in that activity, notably by the former president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who's incarcerated on drug trafficking charges right now and going through a trial. But that extends further when it becomes part of this Bolivarian threat network or this Foro Sao Paulo network, because they mix the criminality with their ideology. And that makes them more powerful. And so we're starting to see this place in Honduras. And that's why it's no surprise that then comes Beijing. Then comes the Communist Party of China to now flip Honduras' recognition of Taiwan, because they play well within that criminal underworld system. They like that way more than a democratic system, because that system is the one where they have a comparative advantage.
Speaking with Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil, Argentina has a very important election later on this year, the largest election in the Americas in 2023, unless I forget one, forgive me. So when we come back, we have candidates. One is a Peronista candidate. Another one is associated to the Kirchner faction that used to be the inheritors of the Peronista. It gets confusing. When we come back, Argentina's election, and then possible mention of Chile going through floods following drought. This is the New World Report. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.